Getting you home every weekday evening. 105 Drive with Julian Clover.
This is Cambridge 105.
I'm joined by my guest this evening, Rhys Laurie, who was last here in May 2014. Welcome back, Rhys.
Thank you. Thank you, Julian. Yeah.
And we were just chatting whilst that song was playing, and you came in just a couple of days, wasn't it, before you set out on your motorcycle journey around the world.
Yeah. I was just thinking outside. I'm pretty sure it was a day or two.
Yes.
I remember you saying, so when are you leaving? So, tomorrow.
Yeah. So what was the object of the exercise? It was obviously to go around the world, but within that, you had a few challenges.
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't just for myself. It was for two world records, to become the youngest person to ride around the world at circumnavigate, and then also for the most consecutive capital cities visited by motorcycle, as well as raise funds for the Princess Trust youth charity. And then, of course, the obvious, to see the world on a motorcycle.
Yeah, good vantage point, I guess. So I'm assuming that you managed to achieve the feat, otherwise you wouldn't have agreed to come back. But yeah. What were all the totals? How many capital cities did you see?
Well, it was, of course, I ended up doing a little bit more than planned. 56,000 miles, 71 countries, and 51 consecutive capital cities, beating the old record, which was 5.
The old record was only 5?
Yeah, it was only 5.
Not very impressive at all, really. No, if it had been 30, it would have been worth the going for.
So that's why I had to do 51 to make sure no one else out there can break it.
That's fair enough. So can you remember which capital city was capital city number 6? Because obviously that was the one you broke the record with.
Yeah, it was Mbana, Swaziland. In Africa, so that was the big highlight, but that felt like nothing. And then, of course, I didn't even touch Europe then, so it was I still had Europe to go. And then, of course, I hopped into Europe and ticked every single one off.
So I'm assuming, going through Europe, you probably could have got through several in a day, couldn't you, according to the route?
Yeah, a few of them. I mean, it was a lot of a culture change, motorways and tolls and all that sort of stuff. It was very easy, you could tick off quite a few, a couple in one day, which was quite nice. But it feels like only yesterday I was here.
And what was the last city that you visited?
London, of course.
Yeah. Okay, it was a penultimate city, I guess. I should have asked on that one, although that was probably a close one too. The same bike was used throughout. If you watch and I'm sure you'd be interested in this sort of thing, Formula One, for example, they go and change the tyres according to what the track conditions are going to be. Were there any issues which you had to deal with because, I don't know, it might have been rough terrain, and then a couple of weeks later, as you mentioned, you're going on one of those motorways?
I'm riding a Triumph Tiger 800, which, as anyone out there knows, it's like a dual sport, so it's made for going through rough terrains, which I've had. I mean, I've had snow, rain, mud, slushy mud, I've had landslides, city floods, everything. So I mean, there was a few, of course, preps and conditions. When I did have real rough terrain in South America, I changed to hardcore tyres, knobbly tyres, proper off-road tyres.
So what did you do? You couldn't have carried the tyres with you. Presumably you had to pop into a local garage, did you?
Yeah. There's actually quite a lot of motorcycle, and Triumph dealers around the world, which is quite handy.
Did you have a list, or did you just stop and look one up?
I had a bit of a brief list before I left off, just in case, as a backup. But it's amazing, Wi-Fi is everywhere these days. It's actually quite scary how advanced the world is.
I find it's not necessarily, though, in the place where you expect it to be. For example, people talk about, we're doing this, we're Wi-Fi here, there. And it's like, I'd like to make a phone call en route between Cambridge and King's Cross, please. That'd be nice.
Yeah.
Or at least not have a call cut off, because that's even worse. One tries to avoid making the calls. So that is, I guess that's, if you compare it to your journey to some of those Victorian adventurers, for example, the Phileas Fogg type, perhaps. Complete different set of circumstances, because you had reasonable connectivity, I would have guessed, through Wi-Fi, and presumably using email to get in touch still with friends and family.
Yeah, I mean, staying in touch with family, which was always handy. Of course, there was areas where, you can't get Wi-Fi, Central Asia, China. I mean, China, a lot of websites are blocked, so you don't even bother going on the internet.
Right.
Such as Facebook and all that sort of stuff, that you can't go onto those sites in China and that sort of stuff. So a lot of things like that were, but it comes in handy at times when you do need to, sort out a tire change, or, sort out, like when the capital city, sort out accommodation, especially in Europe. I mean, cost-wise of Europe was very costly. So
How much was planned before you went? I presume you would have had a reasonable route, not necessarily down to the precise road, but you'd mapped out the order of the best route to tick them all off in.
Yeah, I had to do it just for Guinness Book of Records to send them my route for their approval. Before I did that, also, you know, you need a rough plan to so then I can actually achieve the records rather than just set off and play it by ear.
Yes.
Because of the records, it makes it a bit more structured. But I did have a rough route. It took me about a year to plan with my father, because, of course, my father has two world records as well. So I've now joined the family clan.
Oh, yeah, remind me what they were.
Yeah, he was. He's the fastest to ride around the world, and the fastest from top of Americas to the bottom. So, of course, he had two, so now I have two. So father-son, four records between us, so...
Yeah, but is there any father-son competitiveness that makes you want to go out and try and find another? So you have one more, although I guess he's probably young enough to go and get another one himself.
Yeah, well, I mean, I knew he couldn't beat me on the youngest one. So, no, I think we've settled with being even. We actually did have a chat over a couple of beers last night on thinking, how about a father-son record together?
Yeah, that would be good. That'd be very good.
So already planning my next thing.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Do you have any scary moments along en route?
Oh, yeah, a few. I mean, not scary, but sort of heart-pounding sort of moments, you know, where the when I was, you know, in the hills of Colombia and riding through real small, narrow roads, a cliff drop to the right, your bike's bouncing all over the place. And I was riding with a guy called Stephen Kirk then, and I said to him, I said, look, this is going to turn ugly. We need to turn around. It started to rain. We ran out of water. Thought, no, we need to turn the bikes, because the road was getting narrower. It wasn't even a road, to be honest. Sort of make your way through. So, yeah, so dangerous. There was many dangerous things like that, like landslides in Chile as well. Complete rain.
So physical dangers, really, from the terrain and the like, the countryside or whatever along the way, rather than sort of dangers of bandits or anything like that.
No, I was quite fortunate about that. Of course, I did encounter, especially in Central Asia, they're quite militarized and Russian militarized. So you got to pay for everything. You know, they'll put up, you know, gates, and you have to pay your way to go through. I call it their beer money. That's all it is.
Because they have strange... I remember when I was in Zimbabwe, you had to buy a stamp to get out of the country with.
Yeah.
And I think the price at the time was $50. And, of course, you pay the dollars, in American dollars, of course.
Yeah.
They took the dollars. You got the stamp. You then had to give the stamp back to somebody, presumably to be sold to somebody else a few days later for another $50. So you didn't even get a souvenir out of it.
Didn't even get it. Oh, jeez, yeah. $50 worth and gone out the window.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there's a few of those things you can do. Of course, I've learned a lot with people skills on the route. When I can tell guards are about to, you know, have a little play with me and that sort of stuff. But I think they've learned that I've dealt with a lot of situations like that, so I'm a bit harder now on when they're there in the uniform and the AK-47's there. It's sort of, it's not really that scary anymore, to be honest.
Yeah, I still find it a bit unnerving, actually, when one comes across these things, even on a US military base in the UK. It kind of makes me a little nervous from time to time, even though they're on our side.
Yeah.
You mentioned you had somebody riding with you. Was that common, people coming out or meeting along with people on the way?
Yeah, I mean, the first bit from all the way to China, I rode with Globebusters, which is my dad's company, tour company, because that's the only way to get into China. So they have special contacts, because taking a foreign vehicle into China was quite a pain. So there was a whole group of us all the way to China. And then after that, sort of solo, and then, of course, Stephen rode with for about 2.5 months. There was a guy in Nicaragua I rode with for about a week. So, yes, there was always, you know, motorcycling, that's what I love about motorcycling. It's a fantastic community. Everyone's always keen to ride with you. Good, you know, good social, you know, sort of skills. And people, you know, as soon as you get off a bike, that's why with locals, you know, who don't know your language, they don't see you look like a spaceman in all the protective gear. They don't wear protective gear. And wow. And
that's the thing, isn't it? You kind of, I don't know, automatically look foreign different rather than foreign. And that does make you stand out.
It breaks the ice barrier, and they especially, you know, they instantly go, where are you off to? Where are you from? Where are you going? Because they know, you look at the bike, it's dirty, you're dirty, you've got all your luggage, that's your house you're living on. And they know instantly, this guy's serious. It's amazing feeling. So.
And how much did the Prince's Trust get out of this, the organisation you're doing it for?
Yeah, I mean, I've started to raise up more now because I'm back in the UK, so I can focus a bit more on the raisings. I think I got about £2,500 raised as that. So I think it was about 1,000 when I arrived. So now there's been, of course, there's heaps of publicity. Now I've actually finished it. I can say I've done it, which is cool, which is fantastic to see, because I'm also doing it to, you know, get younger people into motorcycling, which is why, like, I call myself Tomorrow Rider. All my websites and that's Tomorrow Rider. So that's why I'm trying to get young people in to motorcycling and traveling differently on bikes, because it is really unbelievable. And that's why the Prince's Trust helps young people get out and do stuff. And yeah, what better way to do it? So.
And the Guinness Book of Records, was there anybody there with a clipboard right at the very end to check who got back? Or
no.
I don't suppose they came out along the way. That would be quite good.
Put them on the back.
A man with a Panama hat up in Colombia or somewhere just to tick you off.
No. I mean, that's actually all the back end sort of stuff, which a lot of people out there is not seeing what I'm doing. I'm busy today doing all the paperwork, the evidence, because every capital city I had to get a photo of me in the bike, get a witness to sign. My GPS tracks me. And so I was busy today getting all that, you know, my flight tickets, the freight copies, all that sort of stuff. So I was
all the evidence to make sure that you can say, right, here we go, and then they can say, yeah, he must have done it, because, you know, he was on these places on these dates.
Yeah, and I clocked it by mileage, you know, so write down X miles, I've got fuel, so then I send that to Guinness, and then hopefully I'll then go along and then I'll get my certificate. So
that's great.
Yeah,
nice to see you authorised and officially in the book. Then you'll be on people's coffee tables for Christmas for some time to come.
Yeah, that's the one.
Rhys, thank you very much for coming back to see us again. I rather suspect we might be talking again at some point in the future on some adventure or other. We're going to do travel next, not worldwide. It's just going to be for sort of the city of Cambridge,
in
a sort of a 7-mile radius or something similar. Thanks very much.
No, thank you.